Welcome to The Final Word, a Bible teaching ministry with pastor, teacher, and author Jim Andrews. The Final Word is grounded on the invincible conviction that what the Bible teaches, God teaches, and that is the last word. On this program, truth still matters. The Bible is in, Babel is out. The Final Word is funded by listeners like you. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about the program, please go to our website at thefinalwordradio.com. There you'll find archives so you can listen to any program you may have missed. Visit us on Facebook at The Final Word Radio and write us a note. We love hearing from our listeners. We'll provide other contact information at the end of the program, so have your pen ready. And now, Jim Andrews continues his study of God's Word.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us on The Final Word. We continue our study of the book of Proverbs. We've just finished an exposition of the entire book, but we have some thematic studies in the book of Proverbs that pull together certain topics and teach those themes in a concentrated way. Today, we have a study of leadership in Proverbs, and I want to share that with you. In this world, power and authority are constant realities. Our Declaration of Independence declares that, quote, all men are created equal. In the sight of God, that is true in terms of human worth. But that's not true in the sight of man. Though by nature, all human beings are vested with the same worth and dignity, being created in the image and likeness of God, by virtue of divine providence, not all humans inherit the same positions, wield the same power, or exercise the same authority. Power or authority may be exercised justly and prudently, or selfishly, oppressively, and diabolically. Authority or leadership is something that in the providence of God we may exercise to a greater or lesser degree, or something that we just may be one of those that has to reckon with those who do have it. In other words, we exercise it or in some station of life where we are exercised by it. How well we get along in the conditions of this life may be determined by our use or abuse of authority and by our reconciliation or reaction to its presence. The Proverbs have much to say about those who possess power and also offer some advice about relating to power or authority. Generally speaking, the Proverbs speak in terms of a monarchical paradigm where a king or a prince possesses autocratic power in civil administration. The principles embedded in this wisdom sometimes are applicable to any leadership situation. This world is not our home, but we have a long visitation here in most cases, and a mission to accomplish for the glory of God while we await the consummation of our salvation. Through His wise servants, God has bequeathed to us wisdom that will help us accommodate ourselves to the realities of life. Some of you, my listeners, are leaders in your vocations. Others of you are followers, and some of you are both. You lead those below you on the corporate ladder, and you are subject to those above you. Whether we lead or follow, the Proverbs have some wisdom to impart. For example, as a leader, how do you measure yourself? Well, first of all, a good leader elevates his charges. A poor one devastates them. Proverbs 14:28 says, "In multitude of people is the king's glory, but in dearth or fewness or paucity of people is a prince's ruin." The relevance of this is that it helps to have the bottom line. Leadership ability and leadership effectiveness are not the same thing. Leadership ability is often misdirected and misfires. I have known a couple of people over the course of my life, both Christians, who had more leadership in one finger than most people have in their whole bodies. They were full of leadership, but in both cases, too much of the time their leadership was misdirected and misfired. A person may have a leadership personality, but that personality is not directed by sound character. Sometimes people say they want a strong leader. As good as strong leadership is, it is as dangerous as a car without brakes if not allied with wisdom. Then, too, some leaders measure themselves by their strength, that is, by their decisiveness, by their ability to take tough stands. Now, all that belongs to good leadership. But without the wisdom to drive those things and a servant spirit in a leader, such leadership can destroy a people or an organization. In short, we need sound paradigms or models of leadership in the church and in the office and in the nation. A multitude of people is a king's glory, galvanizes a people, preserves a people, protects a people, guards a people, and guards their interest. But in dearth of people is a prince's ruin, and the implication is the prince has something to do with that by poor leadership. There's another lesson here. Measure the effectiveness of your leadership against the impact on those you lead. Leadership can be abusive, tyrannical, oppressive, not only in the office, but in the home, in the church. The real currency of leadership is people. The goal of any good leader should be to improve the lot of those under his charge before improving his own lot. A bad leader wreaks havoc upon his followers and leads their fortunes to ruin. But under a good leader, morale and circumstances improve, and supporters flourish. In a multitude of people, that phrase here refers not simply to the statistical measure of a king's subjects, but implies a flourishing nation. A nation well led will be well fed, so to speak. A nation well led will be fruitful, will multiply and prosper. Human prosperity is the currency of political wealth, not scope of geographical territory nor material opulence. The point of this proverb is to remind leaders who may aspire to distinction that their glory as leaders does not depend on their personal wealth or the grandeur of their lifestyle, but upon the health, the wealth, and the happiness of their subjects. A leader is no greater than his domain. He is no greater than the people he represents, is no more illustrious than the dignity of the people he governs. The thing that made Alexander the Great so great as a leader was not just the breadth of the realm he conquered, which was humongous, but the stature of the men who followed him so loyally, Seleucus, Cassander, Lysander, and Ptolemy, all imposing figures in their own right, especially Seleucus and Ptolemy, who themselves founded great dynasties that dominated the politics of the Middle East for generations after Alexander's time. So many modern leaders seem to surround themselves with little puppets who have no mind or will of their own, and they love to have it so. Thus, the leaders are diminished by the weaklings around them. A great leader does not cannibalize his followers. The glory or the honor of any leader is in direct proportion to the greatness of his people. A leader does not make a people great, but a great people can make a leader distinguished. The prosperity of his domain, in whatever way that is to be measured in a given leadership context, is the ultimate tribute to any leader. Again, not the grandeur of his lifestyle at the expense and ruin of his subjects. The health and vitality of his subjects is that which honors the leader. The bottom line is that the best leaders are servants of the welfare of those whom they lead, not leeches who suck their blood and make themselves rich at their expense. So the question for any leader is this: are your followers better off or worse off than before you arrived? Continuing this focus on leadership, from the text of the Proverbs, I would say, secondly, the restraint of evil and the administration of justice is the ordained function of civil authorities. If we know what the essential function of our civil authorities is supposed to be, The relevance of this is that we will be better qualified to judge who is fit to exercise those functions. For example, the media raises the question whether or not character is a part of the equation of political leadership. The character issues, Nixon, Packwood, Kennedy, Clinton, and such come up. To the extent that the media decides that character is not an important issue, it arrogates to itself the right to withhold from us, the public, what it knows about the debauchery and the corruption of our political leaders, as they admit they did in the case of FDR. The nation pays the price for moral rogues in all kinds of inequities and injustice. People with character require character solutions to people's problems. People with guilt are always trying to exonerate themselves, to exorcise their own demons by some sort of fig leaf, like excessive zeal on environmental issues, to cover up their lack of principle on moral issues. People who take money aren't too careful about giving others money they shouldn't have. If the restraint of evil and the administration of justice is the central duty of human government, as the Proverbs repeatedly emphasize, then character is certainly critical to the equation of fitness for such an office. If an office holder takes bribes, if an office holder is unfaithful to his wedding vows, if an office holder is a drunk who dares perform his duties without a clear head, if an office holder is guilty of great ethical lapses, if he fraternizes with corrupt, dubious people, then he is hardly fit for adjudicating right and wrong, justice and injustice. One whose spiritual eye is diseased does not see moral issues very clearly, as the Lord tells us in Matthew chapter 6. If the eye is dark, then great is the darkness that is within us. Proverbs 20:26 says, "A wise king winnows the wicked and drives the threshing wheel over them." Proverbs 20, verse 8 says, "A king who sits on the throne of justice," I want you to note how that is the essential function of his place, "disperses all evil with his eyes," that is, in the zealous pursuit and execution of justice, a just king exposes evildoers and inhibits their activities. The restraint of injustice is approximately in proportion to the zeal of civil authorities to prosecute it expeditiously. Evil is inhibited and cowered by a confrontation with legal and moral authority bound up in the same person. Kings or civil authorities, whether they know it or not, are God's representatives, and they speak for God. That is, they are his ministers, as Romans 13 so emphatically and clearly teaches. His ministers in the service of justice. However, they may grow corrupt and careless in the administration of their duties, as did Eli the high priest, 1 Samuel chapter 2. And if they do not rightly discharge their ministry, let them understand that they are accountable to God himself for any malfeasance in the administration of justice. For Proverbs 16:10 tells us, "A divine decision is on the lips of the king. He may be oblivious to that, but he had better get wise to it. His mouth should not err in judgment." Oppression, then, is not the divine right of political leaders or civil authorities. Like a roaring lion and a rushing bear is a wicked ruler over a poor, helpless people. A leader who is a great oppressor lacks understanding, but he who hates unjust gain will prolong his days in office. Proverbs 28:15 through 16. The third lesson of leadership we learn in Proverbs is this. Behind the hand of civil authorities is, as we've already suggested, the sovereign hand of God. Proverbs 21:1 says, "The king's heart is like channels of water in the hand of the Lord. He, the Lord, turns it wherever he wishes." Proverbs 29:26 says, "Many seek a ruler's favor, but justice for a man comes from the Lord." Every wise leader is a debtor to the common grace of our sovereign God. Common grace, as opposed to special grace, refers to those blessings of God, like, for example, the sun, the rain, and the fruitfulness of creation, arts, and various worldly skills. Those gifts God bequeaths to the human race in various measures, as it may please him for the good of all. Some more than others God endows with wisdom and understanding of various kinds. Some men rise above their fellow men and become great. And when it pleases God and serves his purpose, although these great ones do not know him nor serve him, for his own reasons God endows them with all those attributes, including wisdom, to make them successful for the ends to which God has appointed them. Proverbs 8:15-16 says, "By me," these are the words of wisdom, the handmaid of God, "by me kings reign, that is, reign successfully, and rulers decree justice. By me princes rule, and nobles, all who judge rightly." So support your leaders as long as they are morally supportable. Never set about to undermine your leader, national, state, local, or in your business, wherever. Realize that the sovereignty of God, and I'm speaking specifically of civil authorities, has put that leadership in place. Not perhaps because God is pleased with him, but perhaps because God has something to teach those under him, or maybe because God is displeased with the followers. God, it appears to me, does one of three things. He favors a people with a gift of the leadership they deserve, or he tests them with leaders better than they deserve, as in the case of Moses, or he burdens them with leaders they so richly deserve. In any case, it is not our place to disturb his divine arrangements except through legal and legitimate means. For Proverbs 24, verses 21 through 22 says, "My son, fear the Lord and the king. Do not associate with those given to change, that is, rebels, the seditious, for their calamity will rise suddenly, and who knows what ruin that comes from both of them." The fourth lesson we learn here in Proverbs concerning leadership is this. Fools provoke power, human authority, with rashness and presumption, but the wise and the prudent pacify it with tact. Proverbs 16:14, "The wrath of the king is as messengers of death, but a wise man will appease, will pacify it, not provoke it," in other words. Proverbs 19:12 says, "The king's wrath is like the roaring of a lion, fearsome, but his favor is like dew on the grass, a great benefit to its recipients." Proverbs 20, verse 2 says, "The terror of a king is like the growling of a lion. He who provokes him to anger forfeits his own life." Bottom line here, don't tease the dog, and respect the power of alienated authority to make your life miserable. Don't be stupid. Power can make your life present or miserable, so treat it with respect and tact, lest you tease the lion and excite its ferocity against yourself. Watch overreaching. Proverbs 23:1-3, "When you sit down to dine with a ruler, consider carefully what is before you." In other words, exercise some restraint before you take full advantage. "Put the knife to your throat. If you are a man of great appetite," that is, eager ambition, "do not desire his delicacies. Don't grasp for all the goodies at once, for it is deceptive food. Let things come to you," in other words. Be modest. Be restrained. Mind your manners. Proverbs 22:11 says, "He who loves purity of heart and whose speech is gracious, the king is his friend." Proverbs 14:35, "The king's favor is toward a servant who acts wisely, but his anger is toward him who acts shamefully." And finally, in 16:13, "Righteous lips are the delight of kings, and he who speaks right is loved." The fifth lesson we learn here is this. A wise man of low degree has a better chance of leading than a fool with a good pedigree. Proverbs 17:2 says, A lowly servant who acts wisely will rule over a son who acts shamefully and will share in the inheritance among the brothers. Now, the relevance of this point is this. It may help curb our excess and our excuses in the pursuit of our goals and dreams. Rightly motivated ambition is a divine prod. Selfishly driven ambition is a demon that will goad us into a lot of foolishness that will only harm us and others. You know, there's a lot of truth to the saying that getting ahead in life is not a matter of what you can do, but who you know, that it is a matter of being in the right place at the right time. But I will tell you something, and some of you don't need told. It doesn't matter who you know if what they know doesn't do you any favor. It doesn't matter if you are in the right place if your foolish habits go before you and convince those in leadership who make decisions that you are not the right person. Wise people have a way of emerging from under the heap. Wisdom is a precious commodity that is in rare supply. And whenever wise people are in charge, they prize wisdom so much that they don't worry about pedigree and other superficial things like that. Wisdom covers a multitude of deficits. Life has a way of making room at the top for wise and understanding people. And it has a way of demoting those who have nothing but birthright to keep them there. Exceptions are those cases where God in His judgment upon a corrupt society sees fit to visit it with the fruits of its corruption. Isaiah speaks of this very situation in Isaiah 3:4, 3:12, and 19:11 through 14. However, in the ordinary providence of God, cream rises to the top, even if it has to come all the way from the bottom. Crud is skimmed off. Wisdom has a way of elevating the lowly to power, more than pedigree does, and keeping fools in it. Sixth lesson here is this. Integrity in and around a leader does wonders for his staying power. The relevance of this is that trust is the most indispensable and precious commodity that any leader has going for him. Without trust, a leader has to depend upon terror or fear to keep trouble at bay. When one does not have the heart of the people, the only substitute is an iron fist. The trouble with that formula is that most leaders who lack it live in paranoia, unable to relax, let down their guard, and eventually they get toppled anyway. Nothing does more to enhance trust and respect than integrity in and around a leader. The character of the leader is seen in those with whom he surrounds himself. Proverbs 25:5 says, "Take away the wicked from before the king, and his throne will be established in righteousness." Wise leaders gravitate, I say again, to wise people. Moral leaders gravitate to moral people. Debauched leaders surround themselves with their own kind. Leaders need people they can trust. It sometimes happens that even if they are not the best people themselves, they often appreciate the value of people of integrity about them. He who loves purity of heart and whose speech is gracious, the king, that is a wise king, is his friend. The king's favor is toward a servant who acts wisely, that is, a wise king's favor. But his anger is toward him who acts shamefully, Proverbs 14:5. Righteous lips are the delight of kings, but he who speaks right is loved. The kind of people a leader surrounds himself with tells you a great deal about the character and the values of the leader. Proverbs 16:12 says, "It is an abomination for kings to commit wickedness, for the throne is established in righteousness." Loyalty and truth preserve the king, and he upholds his throne by righteousness. 20:28. A leader who is a great oppressor lacks understanding. He who hates unjust gain will prolong his days. 28:16. The king gives stability to the land by justice, but a man who takes bribes overthrows it. Proverbs 29:4. Well, friends, these are some of the lessons that we can learn from the material in Proverbs about leadership. Thank you, dear friends, for joining us on The Final Word. God bless you and have a wonderful day.
The Final Word is a listener-supported ministry. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about this program, please visit our website at thefinalwordradio.com. Our postal address is The Final Word, 4565 Carmen Drive, Lake Oswego, Oregon, 97035. Our email address is info@thefinalwordradio.com. And our phone number is 503-699-9840. If this program is ministered to you, tell a friend about it. We do solicit your prayers for God's hand upon this outreach.